Hello and welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 categories smart. This is Jessie Colhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, Behave, the Biology of Humans at Our Best and Our Worst, by Robert Sapolsky and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. What happened an hour, a decade, a million years earlier? What happened were factors that impacted the brain and the behavior it produced. Behave by Robert Sapolsky takes a comprehensive look at factors that drive our behavior, ranging from areas such as neurobiology, genetics, culture, our environments, and much more. Why do we do what we do? Behave seeks to answer this very question. In this Life Note, we'll consider what drives behavior, how genes are impacted by the environment, how childhood and culture influences behavior, us versus them thinking, and a discussion about free will. Robert Sapolsky is a professor of biology and neurology at Stanford University, an author of several other books, and has been awarded a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant for his work. If you're looking for light reading, this is not it. Behave is both meaty and complex at nearly 800 pages and is sure to reward you with tremendous new insights about behavior as you consider it from the multiple angles which the author explores. Starting with the first big thought, what drives behavior? A multidisciplinary look. Quote, and behavior is indeed a mess. A subject involving brain chemistry, hormones, sensory cues, prenatal environment, early experience, genes, both biological and cultural evolution, and ecological pressures, among other things. End quote. Before we dive into the specific factors that drive behavior, let's look at the 50,000-foot view of it. You can't just simplify behavior by chalking it up to the genes you were born with, how you were treated as a child, or which country you call your home. It all factors into the equation. It all matters. The author says that, quote, by the time you finish this book, you'll see that it actually makes no sense to distinguish between aspects of a behavior that are biological and those that would be described as, say, psychological or cultural. Instead, he says, they are utterly intertwined. Your behavior, then, is like a giant, complicated jigsaw puzzle. The more you understand about the pieces and how they fit together, the more you can understand your own behavior. There are many books about the individual puzzle pieces, but the unique aspect of Behave is that it examines all of them, and in a much more holistic way. Let's first start with a look at your genes and how they influence your behavior. Big thought number two. Genes and the environment, on-off switches. Quote, genes have different effects in different environments. A hormone can make you nicer or crummier, depending on your values. We haven't evolved to be selfish or altruistic or anything else. We've evolved to be particular ways in particular settings. Context, 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 end quote. Of course, your genes are very influential to who you are and how you behave. Genes do matter, but Sapolsky advises us not to be too overenthusiastic about explaining behavior based on genes. In fact, he stresses that, quote, genes don't make sense outside the context of environment, end quote. For example, quote, stimulating environments, harsh parents, good neighborhoods, uninspiring teachers, optimal diets, all of these alter genes in the brain, end quote. Genes essentially come with on-off switches. Something about the environment can activate the gene. For example, when a female smells her newborn baby, this activates a gene that causes production of milk for her baby. If there are negative factors in the environment, this can also alter genes. For example, the prenatal environment can be very impactful. Quote, third trimester malnutrition increased the risk of some adult diseases more than tenfold, end quote. That's a huge environmental impact. Having 10 times the risk of disease based on your mother's nutrition before you were born? In some cases, the author explains the environmental impact on the regulation of genes can be quite long-lasting, and in fact can even be passed down to future generations. In one interesting example, attentive rat mothers caused their pups' brains to change in a way that they became more attentive mothers as well, and they then passed along this trait to the next generation. This wasn't a gene that was being passed on, but rather the influence of an environmental factor that had impact into the next generation. What's exciting about this discussion of the impact of environment on genes and on behavior in general is that it appears to be more malleable than once thought. In other words, just because you were born with a certain set of genes doesn't mean that other factors can't change you for the better. Or, as we'll discuss in a minute, there's also the risk of changing you for the worse. Big thought number 3, childhood matters, the impact of adversity. Quote, childhood adversity can scar everything from our DNA to our cultures, and effects can be lifelong, even multi-generational. However, more adverse consequences can be reversed than used to be thought. End quote. There are, of course, many factors that may occur during childhood that will impact your behavior as an adult. Let's just take one area for now and examine the impact of adversity during childhood and the resulting implications for adulthood. One of the author's main conclusions is this, quote, while little in childhood determines adult behavior, virtually everything in childhood changes propensities towards adult behavior, end quote. In other words, while not set in stone, everything can potentially matter. According to Sapolsky, when there is early adversity, there's increased risk for drug and alcohol addiction for a number of reasons, one of which is that the dopamine system in a child can be negatively impacted. This can influence areas such as rewards and goal-directed behavior. From a biological standpoint, childhood adversity creates extra glucocorticoids, which can impact areas such as impulse control and empathy. Learning and memory can also be negatively impacted. Early life stressors can also increase the risk for depression as an adult. The details behind these risks and the scientific explanations are further outlined in Behave, but the point is that what happens during your childhood matters. Sapolsky reminds us that, quote, it profoundly matters to provide childhoods filled with good health and safety, love and nurturance and opportunity, end quote. You'll find some new insights in Behave on how various factors contribute to negative or positive outcomes in adulthood. And for those Lifebook members who are parents, you'll find some great inspiration for the parenting section of your Lifebook in creating that nurturing, healthy environment that has such a big impact on your child. Big thought number 4, culture matters, individualists versus collectivists. Quote, your life will be unrecognizably different depending on which culture the stork deposited you into. End quote. Now let's turn to culture. Since culture impacts us in a myriad of ways, to understand our behavior, you must also consider the influence that culture has upon us. And by the way, this cultural influence might reach back hundreds or even thousands of years. The author gives us a great example by contrasting individualistic cultures, such as the United States, with collectivist cultures, such as in East Asia. Just how are these two cultures different? Well, for instance, when you ask an American to create a diagram of their social network, Sapolsky writes that, quote, Americans tend to place the circle representing themselves in the middle of the page and make it the largest, end quote. Asians from collectivist cultures, on the other hand, will draw the diagram of their social network completely differently. They will put themselves far away from the center in the diagram, and the circle representing themselves will be far from the biggest. There's clearly a me versus we orientation based on our cultural differences. And just why is it that Americans are so individualistic? Sapolsky reminds us that the majority of Americans are descendants from people who emigrated to the U.S. within the past 500 years, and those immigrants tended to be very individualistic in character, including what he describes as, quote, the cranks, malcontents, heretical black sheep, You get the picture. To leave their country behind, they had to be individualistic indeed. Culture will influence us in many ways. For example, quote, morality, empathy, child-rearing practices, competition, cooperation, definitions of happiness, end quote, and many more. So if you want to understand someone's behavior, it's certainly helpful to consider cultural influences. Check out Behave for a more fascinating discussion on this topic, and the book will provide some great food for thought on how your own culture impacts your behavior as well. If you're interested in this topic, you might also enjoy Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. See our previous life note on that great book. Big thought number 5, us versus them, automatic biases against them. Quote, thus we tend to think of us as noble, loyal, and composed of distinctive individuals whose failings are due to circumstances. Thems, in contrast, seem disgusting, ridiculous, simple, homogeneous, undifferentiated, and interchangeable. End quote. One factor that influences the way that we behave is the tendency for our brains to segment into us versus them groups. And Sapolsky informs us that our brains do this with stunning speed. In fact, he says that, quote, the brain differentially processes images within milliseconds based on minimal cues about race or gender, end quote. So we very quickly notice when someone is different from us, and we have rapid automatic biases against them. If you are a major sports fan, you'll surely recognize the us versus them concept when you're screaming loudly to cheer on your own team or berating the other side. So how does this us versus them grouping impact our behavior? Well, we're more likely to help those who we consider an us, for one. There's an example in Behave about how soccer fans are more likely to help an injured spectator if he's wearing their team's insignias. Mind you, this is just a spectator, but if he's not wearing the right gear, it seems he's in trouble. There's also more loyalty and favoritism among us members versus them. Throughout your life, you've no doubt felt the impact of an us versus them situation, and whether you were an outsider or an insider, it's clear that this segmentation is a very real part of behavior. Sapolsky suggests that, quote, our generic goal is not to cure us of us versus them dichotomizing, end quote. It's in fact not possible to do so, unless there's a brain injury. But we can do certain things, such as sharing different perspectives and bringing people together with shared goals. Who knows? With a little bit of work, you might even be willing to share your nachos with that sports fan from the opposing team. Or at least help him out if he's injured. Perhaps let's start there first. Big thought number 6. Free will. Is my behavior really my fault? Quote, the artificial intelligence pioneer Marvin Minsky once defined free will as internal forces I do not understand. People intuitively believe in free will, not just because we have this terrible need for agency, but also because most people know nothing about these internal forces. End quote. The author certainly is not afraid to tackle any topic related to behavior, and so let's also go there with him in a discussion about free will and to what extent it influences us. Sapolsky writes that there are 3 possible ways that we can look at free will when it relates to behavior. 1, we have complete free will in our behavior. 2, we have none. And 3, somewhere in between. It's particularly interesting to consider this question in light of criminal behavior, and it seems that the discussions have evolved over the last few years, where we often say, it's not him, it's his disease. In fact, we've learned more about the brain, so this has influenced discussions about criminals and various contributing factors, such as the impact of brain damage on committing a criminal act. Sapolsky offers some thought-provoking insight here and says that, quote, if someone had their entire frontal cortex destroyed, you probably wouldn't hold them responsible for their actions because their rationality is grossly impaired when deciding their own course of action. But what if 99% of the frontal cortex is destroyed? What if 98%? End quote. In fact, He explains that it is quite common for death row inmates to have damage to the frontal cortex, which likely came in early life, so this is a relevant and important point to consider. The question then is, to what extent is our behavior caused by free will, and to what extent do factors such as healthy functioning of our brain have on our behavior? It's certainly a complicated puzzle. We've touched on everything from the environmental impact on our behavior to culture, childhood, and many other factors. You'll enjoy delving into these topics in Behave. We highly recommend this book for a comprehensive look at what drives behavior, written in an engaging way. So there we have it, Robert Sapolsky's deeper look at the factors that drive our human behavior. We hope you found it valuable and insightful. Thank you so much for listening in. We look forward to sharing more wisdom with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.